the youngest guy, but by the end of the week, you know, you had Anson Carter and Chris Chelios and Rob Blake and Glenn Murray. Cammy Granato was there. You know, all these players just treating you like you're part of the group now. And that was just really cool for me as a kid growing up in Cole Harbour. Like, the NHL seemed like a different planet. And here I was skating with these players in California.
But there was one in particular that would change his life, a member of hockey royalty. Definitely one of my all-time favorite players, and a man who Sidney had posters of on his walls growing up. Penguins legend, Mario Lemieux.
My first interaction with Mario was in California. He was out there training, and he was training at Gold's Gym. A lot of the NHL guys used to train out there, Chris Chelios, Luke Robitaille, Anson Carter. I just loved hanging around there. I was lucky enough to go out there for a couple camps and skate with all those guys, and Mario was out there training, and I mean, I probably asked him 1,000 questions. You know, seeing all those guys, but being around him, I mean, you know, I had posters of Mario growing up. You know, it was him, Wayne Gretzky, and Steve Yzerman. Those were the three. And to be able to see him up close and skate and do all that stuff and see him train, that was really neat.
Meeting the two-time Stanley Cup champ made a big impression on young Sid.
When I think back to watching Mario, like, it was just so effortless. He made stuff that's so hard look so easy. And he was just so smart. He was rangy, like, he had great hands. You think of the toe drags, you think of him just dancing through guys, but then he was able to set guys up, put right on their tape through three guys. He was competitive, quietly competitive. He was just really special to watch. He just made the game look so easy. And having played it and you see the things he does, you're like, wow, how did he do that?
And Sid made a big impression on Mario, too.
He got on the ice with us, and you could see that this kid had amazing talent. I mean, his skating ability, he would blow by NHL guys pretty easily. So you could tell from the start that, you know, he was going to be a great one.
Crosby continued attending the LA camp during the summers, eventually getting more time to test his skills against some of the world's best professional players, including Hall of Fame defenseman Chris Chelios.
I remember being out there with Chris Chelios. Yeah, I was maybe 15, and we were doing this drill, and I went around him. Like, I had a ton of speed built up to the neutral zone, and he was kind of flat-footed because of the drill, so I was like, I'm going to take this opportunity. I'm going to, like, go wide on him. I'm not going to wait for him. You know, typically in a drill, you might wait for someone, but it was like, this is Chris Chelios. I gotta show I can beat him, you know? And I go wide on him, and he just chopped me down. I thought I had a step, and I was on my stomach sliding before I knew it. There was no way he was letting me by, and I loved it. I was like, this is great. I'm out here competing with Chris Chelios, and I liked the fact that he chopped me down. I wanted to go again. You know, but he's probably thinking, who's this kid think he is trying to go around me and like all this stuff. But to see the competitiveness, to see how good of people they were, the way that all those guys treated the younger guys. And I mean, that's just hockey. But, you know, as a young kid, just to feel that, you know, it's really important because I think that gives you confidence when you're around guys like that and they make you feel that way. And they show a lot of interest and care and they want to be out there with you. And so those are little things, but those experiences went a long way for me.
Back in Nova Scotia, 14-year-old Sid helped lead his under-18 team to the Canadian National Championships. But all the hype around him put a target on his back.
It was getting a little crazy as far as on the ice. The abuse he was taking on the ice was getting pretty crazy, like, you know, sticks and cross checks and all that kind of stuff, you know. And just thought it was time for maybe to go somewhere where just get away, you know?
That's Sid's dad, Troy. He remembers the family beginning to think about moving Sid to a hockey program outside of Canada.
Just get out of the spotlight a bit here and just take a step back and be a kid, enjoy being a 14 or 15-year-old, you know, and not have to worry about all kinds of other stuff going on and, you know, kids can be brutal sometimes, you know what I mean, at that age, you know, like, there's jealousy, there's this and that going on at that age, so we thought it was a good time to go away, just to get out of the environment at that time.
One of the best hockey programs in the States, Shattuck St. Mary's Boarding School in Faribault, Minnesota. At just 15 years old, Sid packed his bags and left home.
Shattuck was really tough for the family. That's far, the United States, you know. It wasn't in Ontario and it wasn't out in Saskatchewan. It was another country, so it was tough.
I didn't really know what to expect. I visited Shattuck. I felt like it was the right decision. I think being away from home, you just don't know how you're going to handle that. I remember going to the airport. I thought in my head, I was thinking, geez, my mom's going to take this really tough. I don't know how this is going to be. And it ended up being the exact opposite. My dad was just bawling like a baby. And my mom ended up being the one to take me to the gate.
It was just a great experience for him. Tough on me, but it was good for him.
At Shattuck, Sid got to play alongside future NHLers like Jack Johnson. It also put him more on the radar of NCAA recruiters. But living away from home still had its challenges.
Big time challenges. Like, it was really difficult. I'm 15. My day is regimented. School was probably the most overwhelming thing for me because I needed to have certain grades to play hockey. So I couldn't miss hockey because of school. So I had to find a way, and it was a big step. You know, you're going from Canadian school to US school. Everything just doesn't flow like it would if you're going from grade 9 to grade 10 home. There's all these things you would have learned that set you up. It's just different, right? Like, the history is different, all that stuff. You're just jumping into things a little bit. So that was a little overwhelming, but that took a lot of time.
Agent Pat Person.
We went to visit, and then that night we had dinner in Minneapolis, and the family, and across the street went to eat in a nice Italian restaurant. And after Sidney came up with, he had all his hockey cards, he had his albums, and he came to my room and he showed me his players that he had. I mean, geez, sometimes I almost have tears in my eyes thinking about this. I know exactly where we were, and he's showing me the cards. I got this guy, I got that guy. So he was still a kid, like, really collecting cards and appreciating all that, yet, you know, he was almost ready for the NHL. It was unbelievable.
Sid may have been young and struggling with living away from home, but on the ice, he was dominant. He ended his season with 72 goals and 162 points, leading the Shattuck Sabres to the under-18 AAA championships. But as his year was coming to a close, he faced an important decision. Stay in the States and join an NCAA team, or declare himself eligible for the 2003 Junior Hockey League draft in Canada, where he was projected to go number one. At the time, it looked like the Rimouski Oceanic, a junior team out of Quebec, would have the top pick.
There was talk that Rimouski might finish last and might get the first pick, and if I did go to junior, that's where I ended up going. So my parents went and visited Rimouski just because at that point I didn't know whether I was going to go to college or what the deal was going to be.
Between playing tournaments and going to class, Sid was too busy at Shattuck to visit with any prospective teams.
It's all happening pretty quick. This is in February, I think, and I think our season was ending in April, so I had to make a decision within those couple months about whether I was going to go to junior or not. And I remember my mom coming back from that trip, and up to that point, when I was deciding to go to Shattuck, there was a lot of back and forth. It was like, okay, what's good about this? And school's really important. Are you going to have good schooling? So when I went to Shattuck, all that was kind of talked through. And when I remember my mom coming back from Rimouski, and I said, how was it? And there was just no back and forth at all. And it's like, I know she didn't want to say it. She wanted to have the back and forth. She wanted to talk through it. But she just said, you're going to love it. That's all she said. You're going to love it. And I was like, what do you mean? Why is it that simple? There's got to be more to it. She's like, I just know. If you go there, you're going to love it. Everything about it. The people, the town, the rink. There was zero doubt in her mind.
In June of 2003, Crosby was selected first overall by the Rimouski Oceanic. He finished the year as the leading point scorer in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League. The following season, in 2004-2005, he not only repeated that title, he led his team to the league championship finals where they captured the President's Cup. With Sid on their side, Rimouski Oceanic had gone from the bottom of the pack in 2003 to league champs in 2 years. Agent Pat Brisson and Sid's dad, Troy, had to adjust to Sid's celebrity status.
I recall I used to go a lot with Troy, and after games, we had to sneak in, go downstairs. Even people were after Troy. I mean, we almost had to, he didn't need a bodyguard. He was pretty big and strong anyway, but he almost needed one too. And we used to go down and buy the locker room, wait there. And then all of a sudden, Cindy came out, and it was surreal. I mean, the boss had to wait sometimes an extra 10, 15, 20 minutes because he had to sign autographs. He had to take pictures with the fans because, it was important to him. It was important to the Oceanic to handle all that right and not turn away people who had driven sometimes 5, 6, 8 hours to come and see this young phenom. So it was at times like Elvis has left the building. I mean, it was crazy.
Sid was adjusting to the attention too, especially as NHL draft buzz began in his second season with Rimouski.
You see those lists and central scouting, and they come and they're taking your height and your weight, and it's starting to become real. Okay, I'm going on the list. This guy's an official scout from central scouting. This isn't just someone giving their opinion. Like, these are legitimate rankings. And our coaches there, they used to, in Rimouski, they used to let guys know what teams were in the building that night, like what teams were represented. So that was always huge, and guys would have kind of an idea of who was looking at who. So like that always brought a little bit more energy to the games.
Luckily, all those postseason games in 2005 helped to keep Sidney's mind off the NHL draft, or with the NHL in a lockout that year, at least the potential for an NHL draft.
I was just so into what we were doing and having so much fun with our team. And obviously in the back of my mind, I knew that I might not be playing there next year. So I just really tried to enjoy every second of it. And we really did. I mean, it was an incredible group of guys, and still friends with a lot of those guys to this day. And that helped, just being able to kind of go as far as we did. You play until late May, and the draft is usually in June. It wasn't the case. It didn't happened until I think August with everything, but yeah, it ended up helping that way.
October 5th, 2005. It had all led up to this one moment at Continental Airlines Arena. Sid's NHL debut. The Penguins facing off against the New Jersey Devils.
The Penguins in front. Recchi scores. I think he knocked it in. Mark Recchi right on the doorstep. Got in front and got a piece of it, and Sidney Crosby will get the assist, his first NHL point, and look out, Loretta. How about that?
So I think just a few of those emotions, being happy that my parents are going to be there. I'm playing against Marty Brodeur on the other side, and I'd seen the clip of Mario scoring on his first shift however many times, being asked about it, you want to score on your first shift? So that's going through my mind. I got to give it a run here. If I'm going to play, I got to try to get it on my first shift. So yeah, I mean, all these things are going through your head.
Sidney didn't end up scoring in his first shift that night. But we wouldn't have to wait long. Just 3 days later, on October 8th, fans packed into Pittsburgh's Mellon Arena for the home opener against the Boston Bruins.
Loose in front. Still a loose puck picked up by Recchi. Shoots and scores. I think it'll Crosby. Crosby does get the goal. And Sidney Crosby has scored his first goal ever in a Pittsburgh Penguins uniform.
It was just a scramble. I think Brian Leetch ended up poking it to me. I think Rex was in there battling for it, and he hit it off Brian Leetch's stick, and it ended up coming across. So I had a pretty open net and put it in, and obviously it was at home, so I was pretty excited and ended up against the glass in a pretty high scoring game. But it was a memorable moment, and almost better, I think, looking back, that it was at home the way it worked out. It was a pretty awesome atmosphere.
Even when you go back and you look at that video, you could just see the emotion. It was just authentic. It was just, he was so excited, and he was like a little kid, although he was a little kid. He just turned 18.
There were 17,000 fans packed into Pittsburgh Stadium that night. And when Sid scored that goal, it felt like a never-ending standing ovation. Head coach Eddie Olczyk remembers the reaction.
And I just think the relief and the reaction from the fan base, you know, like it was just, you know, the igloo exploded and everybody was just so happy for the kid, our trainers and obviously our players and the fans. So it was a sense of relief, I'm sure, for Sid, you know. I mean, it's, those rosy cheeks were smiling as my former broadcast partner with the Penguins, the great Mike Lang, would always say is that, you know, when Sid was skating back to the bench there, he was smiling like a butcher's dog.
Oh, it makes me smile like a butcher's dog. It does. I'm so happy for him.
But it's a different Lang catchphrase that caught fire that night when Crosby notched his historic first goal.
Oh, slap me silly, Sidney.
It's become a signature call throughout Crosby's career.
I just wanted to slap myself silly again. I wanted to do something a little different for him if I could. I borrowed it from my daddy, who used to say, slap me silly, when he got in a situation and people couldn't understand what he was trying to say, and he'd walk away and he'd say, slap me silly. And I'd laugh every single time he did it. And then I was just, before the season started, I thought of that, and I thought of that, and I says, slap me silly, Sidney, it's perfect. It works. I've got my S there, I've got my Sidney. I said, we're going to do it. So that's where that came from as far as Sid the Kid and Slap Me Silly Sidney.
He's had a lot of great ones over the years. You know, it's just so unique, so original. But yeah, that one just, you know, I've heard it a number of times. And, you know, you spend time with him over the years, you know, whether it's, you know, on the plane or on the bus or after practice, just talking to him. You know, just picturing him saying that and knowing he's got a big smile on his face, calling a goal, doing what he loves to do. He's got so many of those phrases that he's came up with over the years, but that one always kind of sticks out just because I know that he's got a big smile on his face when he's calling that one.
Incredibly, it looked like Sid was making good on about 10 years of hockey hype. But there was still a lot Sid had to learn about adjusting to life as an 18-year-old professional hockey player.
You know, yeah, you're silver spoon, spoiled, you know, superstar kid. You didn't have to battle in the minors. You're soft.
Especially when you're living in a house with Mario Lemieux.
It's just one of those things that you know the guys are going to give it to you, but also at the same time, they're going to give it to you, but then the next question is going to be like, how is it? What's it like? Can I come over?
Chapter 3, Legend to Legend.
It was always, you know, Gretzky to Lemieux, you know, those visions kind of going through your mind of one day being able to do that or just pretending to be someone that you idolized, and I dreamed of trying to be like them one day.
In 2001, 14-year-old Sidney Crosby found himself at a training camp in Los Angeles playing with NHL stars he'd grown up watching on TV, including one of his biggest hockey influences, Penguins legend Mario Lemieux.
I think that at that time, there's probably a bit of a shock factor or wow factor just to meet him, just, you know, to be spending time with somebody you grew up watching, idolizing.
Fast forward 3 years.
And of course, the Pittsburgh Penguins come with some marquee talent. Their longtime captain, the newcomer, Sidney Crosby, but Mario Lemieux still deserves first billing, doesn't he?
Well, of course. And when you look at these two players, the guy in the left, believe it or not, is 22 years older than the other guy. But this guy, I'll tell you what, Crosby, you talk about a special player and only going to get better. I mean, he is something. He sees the ice well. He's a great passer. He's a very competitive player. And this is a kid that's going to be a leader later on. He's already showing signs of that.
Sid didn't just find himself on the ice again with Lemieux. They were teammates. It was a surreal situation for the kid. Trust me when I tell you Mario Lemieux is a god in Pittsburgh. This is the guy who was drafted to the Pens in 84 and has been with us ever since. The guy who delivered back-to-back Stanley Cups in 91 and 92. And then in 1999, the guy who bought the team out of bankruptcy.
And he liked the whole operation so much, he bought the team.
By the 05-06 season, Mario wasn't just a team icon. He was a team owner. And now he was lacing up alongside Sid the Kid. It was a move that really spoke to Mario's toughness and was yet another sign of his enduring commitment to the Penguins. On November 3rd, just 13 games into the season, Pittsburgh faced off against the New York Islanders. 4 minutes in, on a power play, Sid scored a goal, his third of the season. The assist, the magnificent one.
Now he throws it off the pad, rebound score! Crosby banks in the rebound as it went off of DiPietro's pad and came right back to Sidney Crosby. The kid with a power play goal puts Pittsburgh on top.
Here's Mario.
I mean, it was amazing. The talent that he had for an 18-year-old was really amazing. All I had to do was try to find him. He would make plays like a true veteran.
It was the first time in Crosby's career that his name appeared alongside Lemieux on the score sheet. Later in the first, Sid and Mario joined forces again, both assisting on a goal by Mark Recchi.
Crosby in front, they scored! And did it go off of Recchi?
Yeah.
Recchi was going that way, and Crosby found him to make a 2-0 Pittsburgh.
You know, give Crosby credit for trying to set up Recchi, who told me before the game that he's fun to play with, and I guess he is.
Mario remembers it well.
I made a pass to Sid, and he got on one knee, his favorite trick. He gets on one knee, and then he roofed it. So I remember that one for sure. Anytime you can be mentioned with Sidney Crosby and scoring a goal or an assist, it's pretty special.
I just remember being really excited and happy that we finally connected on a couple goals. And I knew that was a moment that I would really cherish just because, you know, I didn't know how long Mary was going to play at that point, but I knew it wasn't going to be forever, so I think that was just one of those things. It was a dream come true to be able to do that.
Well, it was unreal. I mean, obviously, I'd played with Mario when we won the Cups together in 91.
This is Mark Recchi.
And he was my line mate there, and then, when he came back, I mean, he still was so special, somebody like him, and it was unreal to get out there on the ice and get in practice and, how talented they both are. It was just fun to be part of that for the short stretch that we actually get to play together.
Trina Crosby, Sid's mom.
That was very cool. I mean, he's Mario Lemieux, right? So seeing Sidney, he had posters of him in his bedroom. That's cool. And then fast forward all those years later and wow, their names are being called in the same breath. It was crazy.
And in the third period, Mario and Sid would be mentioned again.
Lemieux to Crosby, he scores!
The overlap between their two playing careers was short-lived. Mario, who'd come out of retirement in 2000 after a battle with cancer, was forced to leave the game again due to a heart condition midway through Sid's rookie season. The two only shared the ice together for 26 Penguins games. So for Pittsburgh fans like me, that moment in time was a dream come true and a harbinger of things to come for the franchise. There's a 22-year age difference between Sidney Crosby and Mario Lemieux. 22 years. And yet, there they were, improbably making plays together in the NHL. Former Penguins VP of Communications, Tom McMillan.
There's a photo that still sells in Pittsburgh because they still sign it. From behind of those two on the ice right before a faceoff, and you see 66 and 87. And they're chatting before a faceoff. But like it's become an iconic picture in Pittsburgh sports because two of the greatest players ever, both of whom in their own way saved the franchise and drove it to Stanley Cups. But there was this one cool one-year on-ice intersection between these two generations.
Despite the age difference and the fact that Mario owned the team, the two developed a unique and special relationship. Here's Mario.
I had a chance to play with him, half the year. He played on my left side a couple games, which was amazing. I mean, the vision that he had on the ice, the anticipation, and we clicked right away.
People always say that game, recognize game. Like, it's the truth with them.
That's current Penguins head of media relations, Jen Bolano.
That mutual respect was there from the get-go, and I think the awe of Sid with Mario, it was there, and then instantly Mario saw how good he was, and I don't think Sid had to feel like, oh my God, it's Mario Lemieux, because I think Mario was like, holy crap, this kid's really good, he is a superstar, and it was evident from the get-go.
There was a glow around the Pittsburgh Penguins that hadn't existed for a number of years, and you allowed yourself to think, maybe, maybe someday, maybe next year we'll make the playoffs, maybe someday we'll have a chance to compete for the Stanley Cup.
You see, Mario wasn't just Sid's boss and teammate and childhood idol. He was also his roommate. Well, more like his landlord, really. The 18-year-old didn't leave small-town Nova Scotia and go off to live by himself in Pittsburgh. He moved in with the Lemieux family.
Mario had said, you know, we'd like you to live with us your first year. Like, you know, I think it would be really beneficial for you. You wouldn't have to worry about a lot. To have his family there and kind of have it be a normal setting where you're not sitting on your own at 18 trying to figure all this stuff out, it just seemed to make a lot of sense. I mean, what better person to learn from? And looking back, I mean, I'm so lucky I got to, you know, I got to live with them, and 1 year turned out to be a little bit longer than that.
It was already a full house over at the Lemieux. Mario and his wife Natalie have 4 kids. At the time, all were under the age of 13.
Yeah. I'm in this new house, and it's my teammate and happens to also be the owner, so as much as it's a normal dynamic as far as the family environment and all that goes, it's also new too. So I think part of me, I was a little worried just because they're probably thinking, like, here's this kid coming in, he's eating all our food, we got 4 of the kids that we got to take care of, we're somewhat babysitting this other kid too, trying not to take up too much space, but I'm also eager and want to learn and ask questions. So I think there was a little bit of trying to balance that, whether it was how to dress or all the things that came with being a pro and being a rookie and trying to understand how to fast track that.
I thought it was important. As an 18-year-old, you know, you go to a different city, you don't know a lot of people, you have to eat properly, and he had all that here, washing his clothes and all that stuff. So, yeah, I felt it was very important for an 18-year-old. We didn't want him to live by himself.
It was perfect. It was a great, great environment to be in, and, you know, when I think of them, I think, you know, their family.
Sid quickly settled into the family routine.
The kids would go to school, we'd go to the rink and drive in with Mario, and then we'd come back from practice and, you know, the kids would be coming home from school, so you'd either, you know, be playing with them, you know, outside, or just wanted to play hockey or mini hockey or something like that. So, you know, we'd have dinner that night, sit around the table and hang out, and that was kind of a typical day.
The Lemieux had 3 daughters and a son, Austin, who was around 10 when Sid came to live at the house.
He was a big brother for the kids. He was a great role model and always took care of the kids, whatever they needed. And it's funny, I mean, every night before dinner, they would go downstairs and play mini sticks and with Austin and the girls. And Sid would come back up all sweaty and put the goalie pads on with the goalie glove. And he wouldn't give Austin a break. So they would come back up and I would ask Austin, who won, Austin? He goes, Sid again. He wouldn't give the kids a break. But that's the way he is. He's very competitive and he loves to win.
Crosby's parents back home in Cole Harbour, Nova Scotia, well, they were pretty stoked about the arrangement, too.
It was huge. It felt really reassuring. You know, we felt big comfort that he's living there and not living on his own. Or not, you know, he's living with a family, too, which was great because it wasn't just, you know, he could still, you know, in his off time, he could just hang out, watch TV, play video games, or just take it easy, you know. It's different if you're living by yourself. What do you do when you're off time, your downtime? What do, you know, but he had a family environment there, which was great for him too, I think, for the time he was there. So that was important.
I remember saying to Natalie, I bet you your kids are going to be gone and Sydney's still going to be there.
Ideally, it would have been great to have Sydney in my house, but I have a little house. We always joke around and, you know, and call it Shea Lemieux.
D. Rizzo is a Pittsburgh native and one of Sydney's agents. He and Pat Brisson helped facilitate the living situation.
It was a no-brainer because it was just a kid, obviously. So to go out there and live with Mario, and he's so great with him and the kids because he just was another kid in the house, and he's living with, you know, maybe the greatest player in the history of the game. So that was just wonderful.
You always want to put a young player in the right environment and want to make sure that, especially at 18, the way he was, it couldn't have been a better situation.
For all the fun family dynamics, at the end of the day, Sid was there to learn. to learn how to be a better hockey player, to learn from his NHL idol turned mentor, Jen Bolano again.
I often wonder what it was like to be Sid, you know, in those first few weeks. Like, you know, I guess when you're a junior hockey player, you have billets and you move away. But to move away and move into Mario Lemieux's house had to be something that, you know, you're walking around on eggshells, I would think, for the first few days.
Mario's a man of a few words and maybe not opening up on certain things, perhaps. But there are two great people and two greats in what they did in their sports. So I think they found a way to communicate in a certain way that maybe you and I wouldn't understand.
I think early on, especially, like, you know, you have that respect or you're just in awe because it's someone you grew up kind of idolizing. And then all of a sudden you're playing together, you're living at his house. And, you know, that dynamic kind of shifts, not just because of the family environment and all that, but just also getting to know him better. And I think appreciating now how important just that influence was and how much I watched or tried to learn.
That bond, you know, and they've never really talked about that a lot, but that bond was very special for both of them.
Things may have been normal for Sid and Mario, but for the rest of the Penguins locker room, it was hard to forget. This was Mario Lemieux, the magnificent one, Super Mario, Mr. 66, the two-time Stanley Cup winning Hall of Famer. Matt Murley, who'd been called up from the Penguins affiliate team in Wilkes-Barre in 2003, was looking for playing time.
You would see Mario trying to, like, mentor him here and there, but I know I was intimidated of Mario, and I think Sid was even still, like, intimidated of Mario. You kind of just leave Mario alone, and I would have more interactions with Sidney during practice, like talking in the lines or, you know, talking after the practice than maybe with Mario. But yeah, you would see Mario trying to pass down his knowledge. And I think those great, great players understand that. Like, it's my duty to, you know, pass the baton to the next guy.
Colby Armstrong was a right winger for the Pens.
It's like another level relationship where, you know, I think Mario obviously understood what he's going through or, and then, you know, cared for him on another level where he's living with his kids in his house and his family.
Armstrong, a.k.a. Army, became one of Sid's closest friends on the team that year. He remembers a lot of special moments that Sid shared with Mario.
There was like a cool moment. We were playing in New York City. And I think Sid had like 2 goals, 2 assists. And I'm sitting on the bus. I don't know if he's sitting in front of me, if we're in the same seats together, shoulder to shoulder after the game, waiting to leave MSG. And he had like this old flip phone, you know, like we had flip phones in the back then. And it like gets a little text on his phone. He flips it open. It says like Mario. It goes, and I remember like leaning over and looking. I'm like, no way. Mario texts you? That's sick. Like, that's me. And he, it said, way to go, kid. Way to take a small bite out of the Big Apple. And like, that's a cool line, but coming from Mario, that is like the most badass cool line ever. I was like, no, if Mario texts me that, I would like be the greatest, that'd be the greatest feeling ever.
Not that Army and the rest of the team didn't find opportunities to rib Crosby about it.
We ripped on him for it a little bit. I think at the start it was like understandable when I got there. And then the fact that he lived at Mario's, I think a lot of guys got some free shots on him over that. Like, you don't even live on your own. Like, what are you doing? Like, you know, giving it to him. But at the same time, I mean, you get to live at Mario's house. Like, that's pretty cool. I remember like going to hang out with him and getting to go to Mario's house, which is like, you know, just to go over to his house is like I was at my owner's house. You know, it's like it's hilarious.
Well, like, if anything was wrong in the locker room, you know, and I don't mean, like, serious, you know, but anything, you know, if, like, it was, there were people would be like, oh, you better talk to the owner, you know, how can we tell Mario, we better tell Mario, and, like, everyone would look at Sid, you know, obviously jokingly, like, and he would be like, yeah, I'll let my landlord know, you know, he was just very good about that.
I got the odd jab here and there. I love that. Like, I just wanted to be one of the guys, so I didn't want to get a free pass on that. I wanted guys to treat me like one of the guys, and obviously it's a unique setup where I'm coming at a young age, and he invites me to stay with him. I mean, it's just one of those things that you know the guys are going to give it to you, but at the same time, the next question is going to be, how is it? What's it like? Can I come over?
Actually, if you want a mental image of just how routine and domestic life at Chez Lemieux was for Sidney, it's hard to top the stories about the time Sid got a dog.
We got Sam, and, you know, like any puppy, she was peeing and pooping all over the house. And But she was doing pretty good there, and I think it was just one night after a game. She must have pooped in the house between the kids and Natalie going to bed before Mario and I had got back after the game. And I remember walking in the house and just, like, the smell was bad. And I just thought to myself, I got to find out where this is. Like, I got to take care of this. And I came around the corner and there's Mario. Like, he had, like, his, you know, white dress shirt rolled up and, you know, tie kind of, like, half off, and he's there like cleaning up this mess, and I'm thinking to myself, like, this cannot be happening. Like, I just got here.
That was part of my job.
A few messy incidents aside, Sid was acclimating to life in Pittsburgh fairly well. But when you play in the NHL, life on the road with the guys is a big part of the game. And for 18-year-old Sid, that would be its own adjustment. Sidney Crosby wasn't just one of the younger guys on the team. He was 18. Translation, underage. So when the team went out on the road and all the guys went out at night after games, Sid had to walk a careful line.
It's not like I, you know, had a fake ID or, you know, I definitely didn't want to be seen in bars, you know, or be in bars underage and create any distractions or get in trouble that way, but also all the guys on my team are of age and going to bars and hanging out and enjoying themselves, and you want to be a part of that. That's just the way it is.
Sid's teammates remember what it was like for the high-profile rookie. Here's Mark Recchi again.
We got him out, yeah. But we were also very protective of him. So if we went out, it was with a bunch of us. And we'd go out and we'd, you know, obviously look after him and look after all our young guys. He's really smart about when to do it, when to go out and when to, you know, when he knows he needs to get his rest. So, I mean, he's extremely smart about that. But he also understands there's a fun element being with your teammates. And that's an important piece that you guys got to go, you hang out and you be together.
The guys had a little fun with it, too.
I remember one time we were in Long Island and we had a couple days off, so we went out to a bar.
This is Matt Murley again.
And he was so nervous, like, oh, they're not going to let me in. Like, I'm only 18. I'm like, don't worry, we'll take care of you here, you know. Greased the doorman and we're in, and then, you know, we're sitting there and he's still nervous. Like, oh, they're going to kick me out. They're going to, like, that's the way he is. It's like, he's not some hotshot that's in there like, oh, I'm Sidney Crosby, like, I can be here. And he's like, oh no, they're gonna kick me out. And he's like, oh no, here comes the owner, like, of the bar. So the owner of the bar is coming over to him. He comes over with the magazine to get an autograph.
I always just tried to do what I thought was right in that situation. And when it came to those years, it was tough to miss out on some of those nights. But we had a great group of guys, and I think for the most part, they understood.
There were no Ubers at the time, so, you know, the fans would be outside the hotel. You get in a cab, they just follow you. I remember going to a team meal once and they followed the bus, you know, like, so you dodge them at the hotel and then the fans are already at the restaurant because they just follow the bus. They don't care. They run in front of cars. It's wild. And, you know, especially his rookie year, you know, that rookie card and those autographs were a lot more scarce at the time.
Ryan Whitney played defense for the Pens. He remembers what a night out with Sid was like.
Owners and the bartenders, they're calling people, Sidney Crosby's in here, Sidney Crosby's in here. So it's like, you know, it was like a petting zoo where all these people would finally get to see him, and he was so young that all these, like, these college kids out, like, that's Sidney Crosby. So it was pretty wild.
Sid's roommate on the road that season was his good friend, Colby Armstrong.
We were on the road trip and we got into Toronto and a couple of guys were like, yeah, we're gonna go to this place tonight. We had practice the next day, we didn't play. Of course, we're not supposed to go out, and we snuck out the back door of the hotel in Toronto and went out to this, like, little bar. There was a few guys there, and then on the way back home in the cab, we decided to hit McDonald's drive-thru up, which is hilarious. I love McDonald's. And I picked up some food, and I was thinking of him at the time because I was like, what if I get back and he wants something? I know he doesn't really eat that, so I got him, like, an extra cheeseburger. Like, if I don't eat my number one meal, I got an extra cheeseburger. I'll pound that, too, if he, you know. So I get in, he's sleeping in the room. I try to sneak in, he's sleeping, it's pitch black, he's out cold, like, you know, like you'd think he would be. And I quickly sneak into the bathroom. I'm eating my McDonald's, I'm sitting on, like, the toilet with my McDonald's lined up on the tub, like, probably the grossest thing ever. And I'm, like, eating my burger in the bathroom by myself, quiet, trying not to wake him up, trying to be, like, respectful, nice. And all of a sudden the bathroom door like creaks open and his eyes, he comes in and the light's like blinding him. He's, you know, he's like, hey, buddy, you got anything for me? And I was like dying laughing because I was like, oh my God, he woke up. He probably smelled my McDonald's. He just wheeled in there, but he just wanted a little cheeseburger action. So I gave him a little cheeseburger and we're both sitting in the bathroom eating McDonald's at like midnight or like 1 a.m.
Yeah, I remember not knowing what I was going to walk into when I walked in the bathroom. You know, he was out and like, is he sick? What's going on in there? And then just to see this guy like curled up on the toilet, just crushing burgers. I think I was shocked. That's the image that I saw because I didn't expect that one bit. But at the same time, I was like, is there anything left there?
Despite his underage and under the microscope status, Sid was growing tight with his teammates.
It was just to the point where you're just like your buddy, you know, like anybody would just like have a buddy come over on a Sunday to watch football. I can't tell you how many times we did that, just laying on the couch watching football, you know? And it was just like, it wasn't like I was hanging out with the next great Wayne Gretzky. It was like I was just hanging out with Sid.
And his relationship with Mario? Well, that was becoming more of a friendship, too.
Obviously, he's got that presence. Anyone who's met him or been around him, you know, like when he walks into a room, he's just got that presence. But, you know, I think the cool thing for me is that that went away pretty quickly. And, you know, it was more of a teammate. And, you know, just knowing how much he was willing to help me, whether it was the drives to the rink or drives after games or lunch or dinner, you name it, I was able to learn not only from asking him questions, but hearing from his experiences and seeing how he approached things. But the biggest thing that stood out to me was just how calm and collected he was all the time. And but when you spend that much time together, I think your friendship just grows.
Sid's teammate, Ryan Whitney.
They would talk a lot at the rink, and I know, you know, he was living with him at the time for quite a while, it ended up being. And it seemed like it was awesome, and you could tell Sid had so much respect for him, as did everyone. There was just like an aura around Mario. You're very nervous to be on the ice with him, let alone like in the locker room going in the shower with Mario Lemieux. So I think that Sid was just trying to take as much in as he could.
In the end, it's impossible to calculate the influence Mario had on Sidney, both on and off the ice.
Well, I think at the beginning, on the ice, you know, Mario had been through some challenging years with the organization. You know, he had been through bankruptcy, obviously, and, you know, losing seasons, winning seasons. I think Mario had a demeanor about him of how you handle the ups and downs. And I think that Sid watched that and was able to adapt, you know, and I think a lot of his leadership skills come from what he learned from his early days of who the veterans were in the room, but especially Mario. As far as home, I think he took a page out of his book in privacy. And I think that seeing Mario and what a great life and what a great family he had and how it wasn't very public and how Mario managed to, you know, be in the limelight and be in the news for hockey stuff and kind of stay behind the scenes and the other aspects of life, I think Sid learned from that.
Well, Mario, you know, being able to, you know, mentor Sid, help him along, protect him.
Coach Eddie Olczyk played alongside Mario back in the late 90s. They know each other well.
It was a real important process to the maturation of Sid to have somebody like Mario to be a mentor and to, you know, be a, let's say, a father figure, but certainly, you know, somebody that Sid knew and understood how great he was and the pressures that go along with it.
I think he definitely paved the way for Sid to come in. We kind of had a better understanding of what that superstar treatment looks like. And, you know, they never ask for anything. It's just, you know, that the better you treat them, the better everything will be. And so I think Mario knew how the organization needed to handle Sid, and I think everything from his arrival to being his landlord, being his teammate, he influenced him in all the right ways. I mean, it's just crazy.
Well, it means a lot to me. It means a lot to the franchise. I've been involved with his career over the years, having played with him. I'll be there when he retires. It just means a lot. I mean, he's part of our family.
I don't think you can try to be someone you're not, so I didn't try to be Mario, but I also could learn from him what worked for him. He's just so good to me as far as helping in any way he can. It could be the littlest thing, but just getting to know him and just having him there for any question or the advice. I think I appreciated it then, but even more so now. He's someone who had a huge impact.
With all of Crosby's hype and media attention, his teammates could easily have resented him. An 18-year-old kid, number one draft pick, and he's living with the boss. But Crosby made it work. And it's a good thing he did.
In front of over 19,500 fans, the Battle of Pennsylvania, and already it has its first surprise.
As Sid would soon learn, there were plenty of players on opposing teams and their fan bases who were less willing to give the kid a chance. Chapter 4, Sid Faces Philly. For nearly his entire hockey life, everywhere Sidney Crosby went, he was hailed the next one.
And here's Crosby on a breakaway, the game on his stick, score!
During his rookie season in Pittsburgh, number 87 was greeted as a savior. But about 300 miles due east in Philadelphia Flyers territory, Sid the Kid was not the phenom set to carry the league. He was the enemy. Now, as a Pittsburgh native, let me tell you from years of firsthand experience, this cross-state rivalry is no joke. When the Pens play the Flyers, it's intense. So I felt for Sid, honestly. When he made the journey to play in the city of not-so-brotherly love on November 16th, the Flyers were definitely looking to send a message to the league's new golden boy.
South Philadelphia, the heart of wired-up Flyers country. Over 19,500 will be here, the 11th home game and the 11th sellout. And they're here to see their team try to deal with the fancy handiwork of an 18-year-old Sidney Crosby. Not just the Penguins' leading scorer, but the Penguins' leader. Tonight, from Wachovia Center, it's the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Philadelphia Flyers.
Former Penguins VP Tom McMillan.
The rivalry was there before Sidney Crosby came, but very early on, the Flyers went after him hard, physically and hard, because that's, you know, the way they play. They're going to hit the new guy, and there was a lot of talk going, and the fans, you know, Philly's a tough place to play. They're chanting right away, Crosby sucks.
The hatred is real.
That's Jen Bolano.
Whether you are from Pittsburgh or Philadelphia, it doesn't matter. Once you put that jersey on, you have a rival. And it is the Pittsburgh Penguins. It is the Philadelphia Flyers, depending which jersey you put on. And, you know, they just took a whole new level to the rivalry with Sid.
The kid? Oh, yeah. You can bet he felt the heat.
There was just extreme heightened sense of awareness, whether it was hockey-wise, whether it was just survival. I don't know how you want to describe it. You know, you knew the pace was going to be high. You knew you had to think quicker. You had to make plays quicker. You knew you were going to have to be aware the guys were going to be finishing their hits maybe a little bit later. I love it. I think the really cool thing about that rivalry, it's been around for so long. And just as soon as you put on a Pittsburgh jersey, it just instilled in you. You know that rivalry. You haven't played a game yet. Everyone talks about it. They're not worth any more in the standings, but they just feel like there's more to it.
And the fans are just crazy.
In the stands that night was Sid's dad, Troy.
You know, it's tough. You know, he's 18, so he's still a young kid in my mind. And, you know, I'm the father in the stands. I'm outnumbered pretty with 19,000 to one there. So it's not much I could do, but I didn't love it, put it that way.
Sid's teammate Ryan Malone took more pleasure in the hostility. He didn't just suit up for the Pens. He was a Pittsburgh native like me.
You know, there's like 6-year-olds giving you the finger, you're like, holy shit, like, you know, it's like they're throwing some beers on you. I mean, it was great.
My Penguins were going to need all the help they could get against their rivals. They'd only beat the Flyers in Philadelphia twice in the previous 10 years. And despite a strong class of young prospects for the 05-06 season, Pittsburgh had gone winless in their first 9 games. The other kicker, Penn's team captain Mario Lemieux, was out of the lineup with a stomach bug. Philly came out strong, making it clear from the puck drop. The Pens were on enemy ice.
6 3/4 minutes to go first period. Sure glad you've joined us tonight on OLN. It's the Flyers and the Penguins from Philadelphia. Now Crosby brings it on with Palfy. Crosby could not swagger through the defense of Therrien. Handed back on.
At the start of the second period, things between Crosby and Flyers defenseman Darian Hatcher got chippy.
Again, across for a drive, and that went off the leg of Hatcher on the shot by Crosby. Right back to him again, points it back to Jackman. Drive, and that one kicked back out again. Crosby fanned on a shooting attempt. It's buried down by Hatcher. Gets up and looks at the referee. Back up ice with it now. And
the Whitney kid drew the penalty, Mike, but Crosby should have drawn one too. That was a cross check on Crosby by Hatcher. A tough one.
It escalated from there.
A payback on a legitimate hit by Crosby.
Just moments later.
Crosby run off with effectiveness by Hatcher. Meanwhile, reaching for it was Paul Fiebet failing, and Crosby is hurt.
Yeah, he looked like he threw his head back. I know he was holding on to Hatcher's stick when he went down, but he took something up high near his face. Welcome to Darian Hatcher world for Sidney Crosby.
Sidney Crosby caught a high stick from Hatcher straight in the face, slicing open his lip and breaking off part of 2 teeth.
Well, Darian Hatcher's always been one big, tough dude. Watch the sneaky left hand on Hatcher. Not there, right? Coming up there. Right across the chin. It's, wow. And down went Crosby. He held onto the stick for a while, but it was the shot of the left hand right into the kisser that created some damage to Sidney Crosby, who's gone to the locker room for some repairs.
Not a game for the faint of heart, is it?
Veteran right winger Mark Recchi was on the ice.
I remember it pretty well. It was a cheap one, and, you know, it was one of those plays that was uncalled for.
Flyers were so much better than the Penguins. You go in there, and Darian Hatcher cross-checked him, and Sid lost some teeth, and his mouth is bloody. Here's the fair-haired cover boy coming up, blood dripping, teeth hanging out, not quite, but close to that.
Crosby's mother, Trina, was watching the game from home.
I would say my reaction to that would be the same as any mother watching her kid have his teeth knocked out by a guy the size of an apartment building. I wanted to friggin' jump in the TV, and that was awful.
Of course, losing a few teeth on the ice is considered a badge of honor in hockey. The real blow for Sid, for the second time that period, no penalty was called on Hatcher.
He got up and seemed to be okay, but Darian Hatcher is one tough, mean defenseman. And he was showing the kid the ropes, not called.
Sid wasn't happy, and he let the refs know it. Penguins left winger Matt Murley remembers how it played out.
He's making these big guys look stupid, so they're not going to be happy about it. So he was taking a lot of abuse, and he was letting the refs know that he was getting a lot of abuse. So then that became like a thing. Oh, he's crying to the refs the whole time. It's like, guys, he's 18, and now this guy's in the NHL getting beat on by these 6'6 guys. Yeah, he's frustrated, and that was the only time he saw that he was, like, human.
If you're 18 in the league, you got to pay your dues before you get a call from a referee, right? You know what I mean? Like, if you're going against a veteran guy, and who's getting the call, veteran guy or the rookie, you know? So first couple of years, he had to learn that's how it was.
Sid's frustration was all about the no call. His teammates and parents may have thought it was a cheap shot, but Sid wasn't mad at Hatcher. Here's how he reflects on it now.
I didn't think it was intentional. I think it was something that definitely adds to the dramatics of that game, for sure. I had gotten a couple high sticks in that game, and obviously that one was a big one, but I don't think it was intended to hurt me, or I think he was trying to play me hard, and it was one of those plays that just, I ended up being on the wrong side of it and got his stick in the face. But I mean, this is a big, tough, physical defenseman. You know you're going to get challenged by him. You know, he doesn't want some young rookie coming in and showing him up. So I knew it was going to be a physical night.
That reaction from Sid doesn't surprise his former teammate Ryan Whitney.
It wasn't like a blatant, like, go up to a guy, cross-check him in the face. It does make sense, too, that as he's gotten older, I'm sure, he looks back on things and he plays things down. Even if he was pissed off and still thinks it's dirty, he probably has gotten over it enough, if that was the case, to say, listen, it was just kind of a nothing thing that turned out bad on my end.
But the refs? Sid was mad at the refs. And the hits from them kept on coming. After getting examined by team doctors following the Hatcher hit, Sid had just gotten back on the ice at the end of the second period when he found himself on the receiving end of another high stick.
Are you fucking kidding me? Fuck!
When Sid went to the officials about it, they slapped him with an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty and sent him to the box.
Crosby just got a penalty. He was being too demonstrative with the referee about the puck and in the air and waving his stick. For a young player, you just have to, I can't say bite your lip because somebody's already gotten his lip, but he's just got to calm down sometimes in these situations. There he hurts his team. He hurts his team. It's part of a process of growing up, but he's got to watch that. Referees don't care who he is.
So I was really upset, and that was towards the end of the second period, and I remember I got an unsportsmanlike penalty because I was arguing the fact that both of those didn't get called. So I got two high sticks within two shifts. So I got half my teeth. The whole building's screaming at me. And I still couldn't draw a penalty. I got nothing to show for it. Like, absolutely nothing. And then I get mad at the ref. And now I'm sitting in the box for 2 minutes, which everybody loves. And I just put my team down. So it's not going great. It could be going better at that point.
Hey, big Darian Hatcher has found a way to play miserable in this game without being called for a penalty.
And the other thing, he has gotten under Crosby's skin significantly. Yes. Now, Crosby laid him out with a huge check in the first period. You wouldn't think a small man could do a big man that kind of dirt, but he did.
I remember, you know, feeling like I had to have a big third period because, you know, I had taken that unsportsmanlike, and I know that guys probably weren't too thrilled with a rookie taking on sportsmanlike in a big game like that. And yeah, I needed to have a big third.
Eddie Olczyk was head coach at the time. Everyone calls him Edzo. He knew he had to say something to Sid.
It was just one of those situations, like I said, from coach to player, to just say, look, you know, I need you on the ice. And Sid knows that. Yeah, he took a stick in the face and probably should have been a penalty and it was a missed call, but okay. Like, you look at, it's the way it is, kid. You know, like, it's the way it is. You know, you're not going to get every call. We want you to control your emotion. We want you to just play, you know, whistle to whistle. And there was a learning curve in a lot of different areas. But from a coach's point of view, when he went through a couple of those difficult times, you just, you know, you get in his ear and you tell him and he would understand and you would move on.
After the game, when asked about the physicality of play, then Flyers coach Ken Hitchcock accused Sid of diving for the call. Edzo was, shall we say, less than thrilled.
When that did happen, me being the coach and standing up for Sid, a couple of days later, I stood up for Sid and went after Hitch and pretty much told Hitch to mind his own fucking business. You worry about your guys, I'll worry about my guys.
Fairly or unfairly, the seed was planted, and it grew across the league. Quickly. Sidney Crosby was a crybaby.
We're all competitive. You know, nobody gets to the NHL without being competitive. So guys all have a lot of pride and they don't want some young guy coming in showing them up. And I definitely don't want to come into the league and take a step back and just let, you know, a guy roll all over me because he's played 10 years. I think that there was definitely a target there. And with all the penalties that were being called early, you know, I remember coaches saying, oh, he's diving and things like that. But I mean, that was just all gamesmanship to try to get the refs to call less penalties and try to to manage it that way. Like, there was a lot of that going on, especially early on.
Here's longtime Pittsburgh sports radio voice Mark Madden.
The Flyers coach, that Hitchcock, he sowed the seeds of Sid being a whiner back when Sid was a rookie, and unfortunately that stuck with him his whole career, but that was nonsense too. The best thing to do with Sid is just let him be.
I think Sid looked at that, looked back, and would tell you, I think, he did a little too much of that at the beginning.
Tom McMillan again.
And I think that's part of the maturing process, and I think probably some of his veteran teammates talked to him, only in the sense that you sometimes make yourself a target then. You have to make sure that there's a line that you don't cross where you're hurting yourself.
yeah, I feel like being a young player, you have to kind of earn that right to, you know, whether you want to call it argue something or just communicate with them in general. I think that knowing what I know now, I wouldn't have done that. But I also think too, it wasn't a typical situation. Like, we were going in, there was a lot of pressure. I probably didn't quite have a handle on that or understand it. And I think I found out pretty quickly that kind of earned that right.
Ryan Whitney.
I mean, that's a kind of a common thing for a young stud, I think, that has been the best at every level. And you come in and you got these old veteran referees who aren't really into listening to some young kid yell at them. And once that rumor or reputation you have gets around that you're going to be giving it to the old refs, they'll all band together and decide not to give you any calls. So at some point he figured out it wasn't going to work that way, and he definitely changed.
I'm not sure really if people understand how much, I mean, when you watch the games back then, I mean, Sidney was on the screen all the time. When he wasn't on the ice, they were showing him on the bench. They just followed him constantly. So, like, I mean, imagine who survives that kind of just being watched every single thing you do on the ice.
Of course, having a target on his back was nothing new for Sidney Crosby. Here's his agent, Pat Brisson.
It started in the Quebec League too, because, you know, let's put it this way, it's a lot more barbaric at the junior level. The officiating at the junior level, the way things are managed in the NHL is different. He was getting hit, you know, it wasn't easy to be Sidney Crosby. I don't know how he survived.
That's part of the game. You're gonna, you know, obviously their team wants to win too, right? So they're gonna try everything they can to stop him. It wasn't fun in the stands watching him get cross-checked or punched or slashed or abused. That wasn't fun, but you know, that's part of the game too. Some of it's part of the game. You just hope that the referees and the league and people that are in charge try to keep that under control.
He had to earn everything on top of being as good as he is. He had to earn respect in the league and taking criticism while he was trying to navigate it.
Sid's good friend and roommate that season, Colby Armstrong.
In a league where he had a massive target on his back because he was the new shiny toy in town, and everyone said, you got to earn it. And even the other players are like, yeah, right, kid, not tonight.
The whining narrative is an interesting one, because